Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling something that honestly looks pretty dry on the surface, a mandatory internal corporate procedure.
Yeah, it sounds as bedtime reading, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
But trust us, what this particular procedure reveals about, well, organizational safety, accountability, and even the cost of losing knowledge. It's actually fascinating. We're zeroing in on Lottie Chemical Pakistan Limited's HSENS procedure 1.02-02. It's specifically about the handover of line and technical management jobs.
Right.
So our mission today isn't just to, you know, read the rules. It's more about figuring out why. Why would a major industrial company put, what, 8 revisions and decades of work into just making sure one person tells the next person how to do their job properly?
Okay, let's unpack this bureaucracy of safety.
Well, you have to remember, in a place like a chemical facility, a handover that goes wrong isn't just inefficient. It could be catastrophic.
Potential disaster, yeah. Exactly. So this document, it's like the official blueprint for keeping things running smoothly and safely during transitions. The company knows people forget things, especially when things are stressful, like changing jobs.
Mm.
So they formalize it. They mandate the transfer of all the critical stuff, technical details, safety rules, environmental responsibilities. It's all about maintaining operational integrity, you know?
And maybe we should quickly clarify HSENS for everyone.
Good point. It stands for health, safety, environment, and security.
Right. So when you look at the actual purpose stated in the procedure, it's incredibly broad. It's meant to ensure any manager, new hire, promoted, transferred internally, gets a suitable handover.
And suitable covers a lot. It's the technical side, the HSENS stuff, how the organization fits together, and even the basic admin. It's like a total knowledge transfer kit.
What struck me was the scope. It's not just the main plant site.
No, exactly. It also explicitly applies to their city office, where, you know, the admin and commercial folks are, and importantly, the raw water pumping station.
Okay, hold on. Why the pumping station? Why does that need the same intense management handover as the main chemical plant? Seems like overkill.
Ah, but think about it. If that raw water supply fails,
the whole plant goes down.
The whole plant goes down, and potentially unsafely, too. It really shows how they view risk. It's a chain, right? And that chain includes even the bits that seem kind of auxiliary. Management continuity there is just as vital.
That makes sense. It's all interconnected.
Totally.
And the history of the document itself is quite telling. Originally written way back in November 1998.
Yeah, ages ago.
But the version we're looking at is revision 8, updated in January 2022. 8 revisions over, what, nearly 25 years?
That revision history tells a story, doesn't it? It screams that this wasn't perfect right out of the gate.
No way.
They must have learned things over time, maybe near misses, maybe actual incidents, who knows. But they found loopholes. Each revision is basically them patching the system, hardening it against ways knowledge transfer could fail. They've kept tightening the screws.
Which brings us neatly to the core requirements. Section 4. If you had to boil this whole bureaucratic beast down to one core idea, what is it?
It's the written list. That's the absolute foundation. The procedure states there shall be a very mandatory language, a written list of all the relevant issues, and info for handover. And that's for every single management job.
No exceptions.
No exceptions. If it isn't written down, documented, it basically didn't happen. You can't enforce accountability without that paper trail or digital trail in this case.
And just writing it down isn't enough, is it? The procedure says the handover program has to include an actual briefing.
Right.
Someone has to sit down and go through every item on that list.
Right. It's like an enforced curriculum. And then crucially, progress through that curriculum has to be actively monitored and recorded. Both the new person coming in and their manager have to track it.
Okay. And you mentioned lists. It's actually 2 main lists they require.
Yeah, that's right. First, there's the general handover list. Probably Appendix 1 details this. That likely covers the more standard administrative and organizational stuff. Where things are, who reports to who, standard procedures.
The basics.
But then there's the second one, the specific key features list. And that's where the really crucial stuff lives.
That sounds more strategic. Like, not just here are the keys, but here are the landmines.
Exactly. That specific key features list is tailored to the actual job. What are the current big technical challenges? Any outstanding safety concerns? Known weaknesses in equipment? Maybe even, you know, tricky situations with environmental compliance?
So it forces the person leaving to really synthesize what they learned, not just what they did day to day.
Precisely. It's about transferring wisdom, not just tasks.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting for me. The accountability. Section 4.2 puts the ultimate responsibility right at the top. The chief executive.
The top dog.
Yeah. The CE has to ensure that this handover list system exists and is used for every management job in the whole company area.
It's a smart move, organizationally. The CEO isn't signing off on every handover note, obviously.
Of course not.
But they are responsible for the system being in place and working. That elevates this whole handover process. It's not just an HR task anymore, it's a C-suite level priority. It signals downwards that messing this up is a serious organizational failing.
Sets the tone from the top. Okay, so we know that what the lists, the briefings, and the who everyone up to the CEO, let's talk when. The actual mechanics of the switchover?
Right.
What has to happen before the new person is flying solo?
Right, this is the proactive part. Before the change happens, the line manager, the boss of the person leaving and the person arriving, has specific jobs to do.
Three things, I think.
Yeah. First, review the handover list with the person leaving. Make sure it's accurate. Second, make sure it's comprehensive, up to date. Third, and this is key, make sure the most important issues specific to the plant are clearly flagged in that specific key features list. It's the quality check.
And there's that deadline. I found this fascinating. They have to agree on a timescale, but it cannot be more than 3 months.
That 3-month cap, yeah, it's strict.
It feels very strict. Why 3 months?
I think it's about risk management. It forces urgency. The company's basically saying, look, we accept there's a learning curve, a period of higher risk when someone new takes over, but we're capping that exposure at 90 days.
Okay, but let me push back a bit. Is 3 months always enough? Especially for a really complex technical role. Couldn't that deadline pressure people to just tick boxes instead of truly understanding?
That's a valid concern. You know, bureaucracy versus real learning, but the procedure tries to address that. It explicitly requires adequate overlap.
Right.
They mandate that staff moves allow enough time for both the outgoing and the incoming person to be there together. The document literally says this overlap is for continuity of management. And I like his phrase, synergy of experience.
Synergy of experience. I like that too. It's not just passing a relay baton. It's like a mini collaboration to transfer that deeper knowledge.
Exactly. The handover isn't just a data dump. It's meant to be a joint effort. And to seal that effort, you have the mandatory affirmation handover. This is where it gets very formal.
The sign-off stage. Everyone involved has to physically, well, digitally sign. Incoming person, outgoing person, their line managers, and their functional heads.
Yep. All sign an affirmation in this job handover database they mention. It's not just ticking a box. It's a formal acceptance of responsibility by everyone in that chain.
Links them all together.
And it gets even more complex with internal transfers, which happen all the time in big companies.
What's the rule there?
If the manager is moving from another department, both the old boss and the new boss have to sign off in the database.
Ah, that's clever. So the old manager has to basically attest, yes, they finished their work here properly before the new manager fully takes them on.
Exactly. It prevents responsibilities getting lost in the shuffle, ensures a clean break and clear accountability lines.
And the functional head, the department boss, oversees this whole system for new hires and transfers. Yeah, it's not just an onboarding thing. It's for any management shift.
Right. And it all needs that auditable trail, which leads us to the documentation itself.
Yeah, this part felt, well, almost a bit paranoid, but probably for good reason in their industry. Everything has to be auditable. And they have this dual system.
Mm-hmm.
Digitally, the handover documents are prepared and available in their system. They actually name it IBM Notes.
Which tells you something immediately, right? IBM Notes, aka Lotus Notes. That's a long-standing, maybe slightly legacy enterprise system.
Right. And that context makes the next requirement even more interesting, despite having the digital system.
They still mandate hard copies.
A proper file must be maintained in hard copies. Why? Mm-hmm. In 2022, Revision 8, why insist on paper?
This, I think, is the ultimate lesson in compliance for high-risk fields. It's not just about backup. A digital system, even notes, can be changed. Maybe it could be breached. Maybe there's a tech failure. Who knows? But paper, especially signed paper,
yeah,
that's physical, tangible evidence.
The irrefutable proof.
Pretty much. The procedure says the hard copy file is kept by the incoming job holder, and here's the kicker, it can be presented during audit.
Ah. So if something goes wrong 6 months later.
Exactly. If there's a safety incident, an environmental issue, that signed hard copy file is the evidence presented to regulators or internally to prove the handover was done correctly by the book and the new manager was formally briefed on everything, including the risks.
It transforms handover from just getting someone up to speed into a legally significant defensible action.
Absolutely. It explains the weight behind all their signatures. They're creating a chain of documented knowledge transfer and, implicitly, liability. It's robust.
And it connects to other things too, doesn't it? It's not standalone. They mention the appendices for the list templates, yep. Appendix 1 and 2.
And they link it to another procedure, 19.02-01, which is about the Plant dossier.
The Plant dossier sounds important.
It is. That's basically the site's master library. All the core technical specs, safety data, historical information. So the handover isn't just the immediate tasks. It ensures the new manager is formally plugged into that central knowledge repository.
Connects the specific transition to the bigger organizational memory.
You got it. So if we kind of zoom out, connect this back to the bigger picture. This whole elaborate, multi-layered, 8 times revised procedure shows that this company sees knowledge loss during transitions as a massive risk.
A critical enterprise risk.
Definitely. So they've engineered this mandatory, formal, auditable system to fight against that natural human tendency for handovers to be, well, a bit informal or incomplete.
So what does this all mean for you? Listening, whether you're in chemicals or managing a coffee shop, maybe the takeaway is handover isn't just a quick chat.
No, it's a project.
It's a critical project. And in high-stakes environments, it needs clear deadlines like that 3-month rule and very clear ownership right up to the top execs. Every signature matters. It's part of that accountability chain.
And it shows that just assuming knowledge will transfer smoothly, well, that's dangerous. Real continuity takes deliberate effort, documentation, and sometimes, yeah, some pretty heavy-duty enforcement. The complexity isn't necessarily inefficiency. It could be a sign of serious commitment to safety, probably learned through tough experience.
Okay, so here's a final thought to leave you with. We've seen this procedure demands signed affirmations, hard copy audit trails, and it's been revised 8 times since 1998. What specific kind of failure, maybe a loss of crucial technical know-how or a safety blind spot passed on or not passed on, what kind of past event do you think was maybe the final straw? The thing that made this company say, okay, informal transitions aren't cutting it anymore. We need this level of rigorous, formalized, almost legalistic system. That paper trail isn't just about managing future risk. It's almost certainly built on the ghosts of past problems. Something to think about.